SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 1st of April. Well, today is Easter Monday, the second day of Easter, one of the most significant days in the Christian calendar. In the program, we look at Easter celebrations this year in Australia and around the world. Also on NITV Radio today, well, the National Security Legislation Watchdog is reviewing Australia's secrecy laws to strike a better balance between transparency and accountability. In the program, we also have a conversation with Wesley Enoch, giving us some insights into the return of the Australian landmark musical, The Sunshine Club, to Sydney this April. The show features a cast of emerging and well-established First Nations artists. All these stories and more coming to you on NITV Radio after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, Alice Springs police charge juveniles for unrest as curfew brings quiet to the city. The government says breaking up supermarket giants could push food prices higher. And disease runs rampant in Gaza shelters as displaced Palestinians face water crisis. Several teenagers and a man in his 20s have been charged over violence in Alice Springs as a two-week emergency curfew continues in the town. Northern Territory Police have charged five youths aged from 16 to 22 with crimes including engaging in violent conduct, criminal damage, aggravated assault and going armed in public. A further three have been arrested and Crime Command and Strike Force Viper expect more arrests and charges in the coming days. While the youth curfew in Alice Springs has generated a much quieter city centre, it has impeded the lives of the town's young people on the brink of school holidays. Over the first three nights of the curfew, police said authorities had 127 interactions with young people in the CBD who were either found to have a lawful purpose or were taken home or to another safe place. While millions of Australians celebrated Easter with church services and egg hunts, charities have reported a rise in people doing it tough. Some 1,600 people attended a free Easter lunch hosted by the Reverend Bill Cruz Foundation for those hit hard by cost of living pressures. Its founder, Reverend Cruz, says a lot of people are now choosing between rent money, medicine for children, and food. A report by Food Bank at the end of 2023 found 48% of Australians are now feeling anxious about or struggling to consistently access adequate food. Labor is not convinced that breaking up supermarket giants will help consumers at the checkout, pointing to warnings proposed changes could in fact push up food prices. The Greens and Nationals have pushed for divestiture divestiture powers to be legislated, allowing the government to break up big businesses found to be partaking in anti-competitive behavior. Accusations, Woolworths and Coles, are stifling competition and engaging in price gouging have led the government to commission an inquiry into the sector conducted by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, ACCC. Assistant Minister for Competition Andrew Lee told the ABC there could be consequences to breaking up businesses.
The National Farmers Federation have argued against divestiture, and the ACTU have made the point that it could potentially hurt workers. So we're sceptical, but of course we'll always look to advice from agencies, and we're looking eagerly to see what the ACCC comes back with in their supermarkets inquiry.
The federal opposition says the government's attempts to rush through changes to immigration laws proves Labor's lack of accountability. The proposed legislation, which could make it easier to deport people in immigration detention, was blocked in the Senate by the Coalition, Greens and Crossbench. Under the proposal, non-citizens face up to 5 years in prison if they don't cooperate with authorities to facilitate their deportation. The bill has been sent to a six-week inquiry, with Labor claiming the opposition is playing politics on the issue. But Liberal Senator Holly Hughes told Sky News that an inquiry was vital to ensure accountability.
This is how outrageous this government is, that they wanted to ram through these changes within 36 hours, massive changes to our immigration laws within 36 hours. No one can really say what the urgency is. Claire O'Neill did let slip that perhaps it's got something to do with an upcoming court case where, again, the government has failed in its own defence.
Voters in Western Australia are moving away from Labor as the opposition gains ground with young people. The latest news poll shows a rise in support for the coalition from young voters, but Labor is leading 52-48 on a two-party preferred basis across the country. The coalition increased its primary vote by 5 points with young people to 27%, while Labor fell by 5 points to 33%. Independent Senator Jackie Lambie told Channel 9 voters, especially young voters, aren't engaged in politics.
Does that mean they're going to the independents, they're going to the Greens? Where are they going? Because if they're shifting away, they've got to be going somewhere. I do notice with younger voters that they are very disengaged from politics, to be honest with you. You see that from standing on street corners. None of them want to look at you on buses. They're not interested.
Displaced Palestinians living in southern Gaza say finding water clean enough to drink is a constant struggle, which often takes up almost the whole day. The World Health Organization has reported tens of thousands of cases of upper respiratory infections, diarrhea, lice, scabies, chickenpox, skin rashes and meningitis in UN shelters. The rapid spread of disease is mainly due to overcrowding and poor hygiene caused by a lack of toilets and water for washing. Suad Abu Akashan is a displaced mother living in a refugee camp.
We walk several kilometres in order to fill up 1 or 2 gallons a day. A gallon of water is not enough for washing. My children only bathe once every 15 days. There are no bathrooms and there is no water at all. When it's available, we buy water to drink. The water we get from walking several kilometres to get, it's not suitable for drinking. We can't drink it, prepare dough from it or use it for cooking. We only use it for washing and we use it to bathe the children.
Meanwhile, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has sworn in a new government, responding to international pressure to reunite Gaza and the West Bank under a single rule after the Israel-Hamas war. Mr. Abbas's ally, Mohamed Mustafa, will serve as both foreign minister and premier, charged with helping to reform the Palestinian Authority, which exercises limited self-rule in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Mr. Mustafa, an economist and business leader, says his priority is ending the current war and reconstructing Gaza, which is in ruins after 6 months of Israeli bombardment. The cabinet is made up of 23 ministers and includes 4 women and 6 ministers from Gaza, including the former Gaza City Mayor, Maged Abu Ramadan. In Turkey, voters have punished President Tayyip Erdogan and his party in nationwide local elections, reinforcing Istanbul Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu as the president's chief future rival. With more than half the votes counted, Mr. İmamoğlu led by nearly 10 points in Istanbul's mayoral race. Meanwhile, his Republican People's Party, the CHP, retained Ankara and gained 9 other mayoral seats in big cities across Turkey. Mr. Erdogan and his AK party, which have ruled Turkey for more than 2 decades, fared worse than polls predicted. Political analysts say the result is due to soaring inflation, dissatisfied Islamist voters, and İmamoğlu's appeal beyond the CHP's secular base. CHP head Özgür Özel says the moment marks a change in direction.
Today, the voters made a very important decision. The election results showed that today the voters decided to establish a new politics in Turkey. Today, the voters decided to change the 22-year-old picture of Turkey and open the door to a new political climate in our country.
Back home, the Bureau of Meteorology says storms that caused flash flooding, which left campers stranded in outback Queensland, are beginning to ease, but it may still take time for waters to recede. A heavy downpour overnight on Saturday, 30th of March, left dozens of people camping at a popular spot near Mount Isa, waiting to be rescued by emergency services. Campers told 7 News and ABC on Sunday they walked water lapping their tents at the site near East Leichhardt Dam. Some storms have continued around interior Queensland, but the Bureau's Angus Hines has told ABC the area has been much drier in the last 24 hours.
Those storms have moved away and weakened, so a much more significant dry spell on the way, and looking hopefully for some more dry weather there today as well. But we've got to remember, just because it stops raining in your immediate area, it can take a lot longer for waters to recede, floodwaters in particular, when we've got quite flat land in those parts of the country. So even though the rain from the skies might be stopping, can still take a while for that water to slowly make its way down through the creeks, the rivers, and slowly fade away. But hopefully with the dry weather on the way, those water levels will be dropping.
And to sport in tennis, Jannik Sinner has dominated Grigor Dimitrov 6-3, 6-1 to win the Miami Open for the first time and rise to world number 2. The Italian fired a passing shot, howling by his Bulgarian opponent for a crucial break in the first set and captured the opener with a brilliant backhand winner. The 32-year-old Dimitrov had no answer for Sinner's flawless game in the second set and was broken again when his backhand landed in the net, falling behind 3-1. The 22-year-old Australian Open champion has won 25 of his last 26 matches and has only lost 3 times since last year's US Open. And now having a look at the weather around the country, Broome mostly sunny, 38, Perth sunny, 29, Adelaide a shower 2, 23, Melbourne cloudy, 26, Hobart partly cloudy, 21, Albury Wodonga cloudy, 30, Canberra similar forecast, 29, Wollongong sunny, 27, Sydney similar conditions, 28, Newcastle sunny, 28, Brisbane a shower 2, 27, Townsville mostly cloudy, 30, Cairns similar conditions, 31, Alice Springs mostly sunny, 30, Darwin a shower 2, the top of 32, and the Torres Strait Islands cloudy day ahead and a top of 31 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
I'm Bertrand Tungandami and you're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation. Coming up next, well, on NITV Radio today, the National Security Legislation Watchdog is launching a review seeking to strike a balance between transparency and accountability. We also have a conversation with Wesley Enoch, giving us insights into the return of the Australian landmark musical The Sunshine Club to Sydney this month with a cast of talented First Nations artists. But first, Christians across the world have gathered to celebrate Easter. It's one of the most significant days on the Christian calendar, seen by many as a time of recollection and renewed hope. Alex Anifatis reports.
People in Australia and the rest of the world are celebrating the Easter weekend. The Easter weekend marks the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ for those of Christian faith. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has shared his own message with those celebrating the occasion. He says Easter serves as a reminder of some of life's most important messages.
Happy Easter, Australia. Easter is a time of hope and renewal. For Christians here and across the world, it's a moment to reflect on the resurrection. Celebrations and services across the country remind us of the importance of forgiveness, grace and kindness to those in need, qualities that are so much a part of the compassion and virtue of this, the greatest country on earth.
Mr. Albanese has also thanked all those working over the weekend and is also urging Australians to be careful when driving on city and country roads.
As many of us take this chance to catch up with family and friends, we think of everyone working through the long weekend. Thank you for what you do. Finally, to everyone on our roads, please drive safely and take care. Happy Easter.
Opposition leader Peter Dutton also shared his message, saying Easter was a time to reflect on the spirit of renewal and new life for both members of the Christian faith and people of other religions.
At Easter, Christians will remember the life, teachings and sacrifice of Jesus Christ, his values of service and humility, gratitude and forgiveness, tolerance and love have shaped democratic nations and peoples, including our own country, our institutions and our national character. But whether you are Christian or not, Easter is a time for rest and reflection, of gathering with family and friends.
In the Vatican, Pope Francis presided over the Easter vigil following concerns for his health after he pulled out of the Good Friday procession service at the Colosseum at the last minute. The 87-year-old pontiff, who's had part of one of his lungs removed, showed signs of difficulty breathing at times, but made it through the two-hour service. He's calling for people to come together in a message of hope.
Brothers and sisters, on this most holy night, on which our Lord Jesus Christ passed from death to life, the Church invites its children scattered throughout the world to gather for vigil and prayer.
The Vatican said Pope Francis decided to cancel his appearance on Good Friday to protect his health. Many Christians in Rome shared their disappointment that the Pope did not make an appearance on Good Friday, including this woman.
I think, of course, it causes concerns for the people to make sure that he is doing well, but he must have his reasons for the decisions that he makes, and still, I think the people are involved and just... Very blessed and happy to be here and experience these events here in Rome.
In Jerusalem, Christians gathered for the Holy Saturday liturgy. In France, Good Friday processions took place at the Notre Dame Cathedral. And in Seoul, over 15,000 people from 60 Christian groups took part in an Easter parade. Choi Hyeon-tak, president of Korea's Christian television service, says the parade is an opportunity for people to unite.
We are here to celebrate the 139th year of missionary work. The parade is a cultural event that is organized in order to share joy of Christ's resurrection and urge people to unite as one in the name of Christ at Gwanghwamun Square, which is a symbol of conflict and division.
Celebrations are set to continue until Easter Monday, which in many countries, including Australia, is a public holiday. Alex Anifantis, SBS News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
We must now step aside for a break, but stay with us because when we come back, we look at a review into transparency laws, a review that seeks to protect journalists and whistleblowers while preserving national security.
Hi, you're listening to the radio of NITV.
Now, Australia's most serious secrecy offences are under review. The country's National Security Legislation Watchdog is considering whether current laws are having a chilling effect on whistleblowers and journalists. Angelica Wade reports.
The Independent National Security Legislation Monitor is undertaking a review of Australia's most serious secrecy laws. The review considers how current secrecy laws are impacting whistleblowers and public interest journalism. The current monitor, Jake Blight, says the relationship between national security and transparency in Australia is at the heart of the review.
The challenge is in ensuring that those harmful disclosures can be prosecuted, but that they operate in a way that is proportionate and that the law does not criminalise disclosures which are not harmful. Secrecy must always be balanced against the need for government to be accountable.
In a two-day public hearing, Mr. Blight has heard statements from human rights groups, the Australian Security and Terrorism Organisation, or ASIO, press freedom advocates and the Australian Federal Police, among others. The hearings focused on four secrecy offences introduced to the Criminal Code in 2018, which make it a crime to disclose a broad range of government information. It's the first time these laws have come under in-depth, independent review. ASIO Director General Mike Burgess told the hearing the laws were introduced to protect Australia's security interests.
In my view, secrecy offences do not exist to prevent wrongdoing from being uncovered. They are there to prevent unauthorised disclosure of sensitive national security information outside of lawful channels to ensure that intelligence and security agencies can protect Australia and Australians.
But Mr. Blight says many submissions to the review have expressed grave concerns with these laws.
Some submitters, like Civil Liberties Australia, say that there's a growing culture of excessive secrecy in government. Some say the offences are largely fine, maybe with a little bit of tweaking. But many submitters have raised significant concerns with the provisions as they are.
Mr. Blight says one of the offences that has attracted most criticism is the deemed harm offence, which applies to officials who disclose information that is considered to be inherently harmful. Deemed harm covers anything to do with one of Australia's six national security agencies, as well as anything classified as secret and top secret. It's a serious criminal offence that carries a 7 to 10 year sentence. According to Mr. Burgess, a continuing high-risk environment makes these laws necessary.
In the current threat environment, it is very much our judgment for those people who are going through a vetting process for the highest clearance in land, which means they will have access to the most damaging information if disclosed in a way that's not helpful, that our approach is required given the threat environment we face today.
But Mr. Blight says while there is undoubtedly information that can be harmful to national security, the way harm is framed is far too broad and unclear.
It treats all information to do with national security agencies as inherently or always harmful, regardless of whether it's about their most secret clandestine operations or is a more benign administrative or historical matter.
He says this broad definition could lead to over-criminalisation. In his statement at the hearings, journalist and press freedom advocate Peter Grester underlined the significant power the current laws give to government employees in deciding what is deemed secret and top secret.
We do not accept that a public servant's decision to stamp a document secret or top secret is a good way to determine harm to the national interest. It is an overly broad and unaccountable way of deciding what should be hidden from public view. It requires us to take the public servant's word for it.
Senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre, Kieran Pender, told SBS the current laws go too far with damaging results.
Prior government introduced reform that was draconian, overly broad and lacked the necessary proportionality, safeguards and oversight. And what that means is these laws criminalise whistleblowing and criminalise public interest journalism and all Australians suffer as a result.
Mr. Pender says these laws are having a chilling effect on whistleblowers and journalists, which is threatening government accountability.
Whistleblowers aren't speaking up. Whistleblowers are not exposing wrongdoing because they're worried about the impact it might have on them. We've seen in recent years whistleblowers being prosecuted. We've seen journalists being raided. That means that wrongdoing stays hidden. It stays in the shadows and we don't have accountability.
Vice President of Whistleblowers Australia, Brian Martin, says current whistleblower protections are inadequate.
The main issue is that the laws don't work, and there's not even a good example of when any whistleblower has been protected. And the second issue is that the government is prosecuting whistleblowers, David McBride and Richard Boyle, at the moment, and that sends a strong message to anyone working in organizations like Defence or the Tax Office. If you speak up, this is what might happen to you.
According to Mr. Pender, this silencing of whistleblowers is bolstering a long-existing culture of secrecy in Australia.
Australia has a problem with secrecy. We've had 2 decades of what's been described as hyper-legislation in response to national security matters following 9/11. We've had over 100 national security laws introduced, many of which have been shrouded in secrecy. So Australia really needs to get the balance right and wind back some of that oppressive secrecy.
Mr. Grester told the hearing, if Australia is to fix its secrecy problem, it needs to start seeing transparency and national security less as opposites and more as complementary.
It suggests that if we want more security, we must trade off a degree of media freedom and transparency. We submit that this fundamentally misunderstands the role that the media plays in our democracy. We recognise that there is a tension between those two institutions, but they are not in opposition. In fact, we believe that generally media scrutiny makes our government and its agencies work better.
The report and recommendations will be tabled in May for the Attorney-General to consider. After the completion of the hearings, Mr. Blight told SBS, while he can't confirm what the recommendations will be, there are key issues he expects to include.
My job's just to make recommendations, and it's a little early to be talking about those, but based on the things I've said in my opening statement and my closing statement, that's likely to include some narrowing of the deemed harm offence and some clarity in where the offence applies and which defences apply and what the defences for journalists are.
Speaking to media earlier, he said finding the right balance between security and accountability is crucial for the functioning of the country's democracy.
Now, secrecy crimes have a role to play in protecting our national security, but in making laws to empower our police, security and intelligence agencies, it's important that we don't actually undermine the very democracy we're asking them to protect.
Angelica Waite, SBS News.
You're with NITV Radio.
Listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Naamun, the Kulin Nation, this Monday afternoon. We must now go to another break, but when we come back, we have a conversation with Wesley Enoch, talking about the return to Sydney of the landmark musical, The Sunshine Club. Stay tuned.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
The Australian landmark musical The Sunshine Club is returning to Sydney with a cast of emerging and acclaimed First Nations artists. And I'm glad to say I'm joined by Wesley Enoch, author and director of The Sunshine Club, to give us some insights into the hit musical and also the significance of its return to Sydney. Wesley, welcome to NITV Radio.
Thanks, Bertrand.
Now, can you share with us the inspiration behind The Sunshine Club and what motivated you to bring this story back to the stage in Sydney?
Well, it's interesting to go back and understand the history of why it was written. So it was written in the late 90s at the height of the reconciliation movement. And there was a sense of saying the country was ready to talk about how black and white can be together. I mean, the story of the Sunshine Club is about Frank, who comes back from World War II, and he sets up his own dance club because he's not allowed to go into the segregated clubs, you know, like what became the RSL and other dance clubs that were around, that as an Aboriginal man, he couldn't be part of that because of, racism. And so what he did is he sets up his own club called the Sunshine Club. And these are based on real clubs that were around in World War II and post-World War II. In many ways, they were the beginning of what became a political movement that turned into Fakatsi, that then turned into the campaign for the 1967 referendum. Now, all the way forward to 2023, and we have the referendum around The Voice. And there was a conversation then about saying, actually, where have we come from? What is it that, why are we trying to have these spaces, these places where we can have our own voice? It was great to put the Sunshine Club on again, because it was really about saying, how are we intertwined? How do we, as a country, have this history together, black and white? And the Sunshine Club represents this mythical place, if you like, this magical place where black and white can be together and racism doesn't enter into it. And so it's been great. The show's been touring the country And it's great to come back to Sydney because the last time it was in Sydney was in the year 2000. And it was fantastic to be here. And we've come to close to the inner city of Sydney. We've come to French's Forest and at Glen Street and other places. But to come and do a good long run at the Colosseum is going to be a lot of fun, a lot of fun indeed.
Yeah, I'll come to the Colosseum in Western Sydney, one of the really new emerging place of celebration of culture and so on. Coming back to the themes that you explore with the story of Frank Doerr, the themes of identity, resilience and hope, do you think these themes still resonate with audiences today?
What I've loved is that audiences still want to feel hopeful. You know, and the joy of having a musical is it's by its very nature hopeful. It's like people singing as a sense of celebration. Often we can get down, really down. I mean, I think post-referendum last year, a lot of my friends and family were going, oh, what does this mean? You know, what does it mean politically? What does it mean socially? What does it mean culturally? And there was a real sense of kind of pessimism. And then when people go to a musical like the Sunshine Club, you realize that optimism has its place. It's not the only thing that can be done. A musical, a play, is not the end goal. The end goal is for people to have action, to make change. But I've got a sense that there was a inherent optimism in the show that people felt filled up. And I was talking to a friend recently, and she said, you need to fill your cup. You need to not just keep giving, giving, giving, pouring out. And pessimism can do that. You feel like you've got no control. You feel like you've got no way of changing the world. And optimism gives you at least the energy to go out there and say, actually, I can make a difference. And what's great about the themes of the Sunshine Club is about social cohesion, people coming together, socializing, people singing and dancing together, and having a kind of cultural connection. And ultimately, if there's anything that a First Nations artist, as I am, has to teach, is that culture, putting culture in the center of every discussion, actually helps us all understand each other, helps us grow together. And literally and figuratively, how we can dance together on a dance floor that is made for us, has a space for us. So, yes, maybe I'm kind of too optimistic or too naive about these things. But I think that what I want for Australia is to feel optimistic about the future, and with that optimism have an energy that we can go, actually, we can change things. Because we all know that fear doesn't change anything. Fear keeps things exactly the way it is. If you are scared of another person or something changing or something happening, if you are scared, you only want to hold on to what you've got. If you are optimistic, you can realize that you can pick up something new, let go of something old, try something different. And that's what I think we need to do as a country, is feel so optimistic through our arts that we can see things not through the lens of fear and difference, but see something as a possibility as a nation growing together.
Yeah, and using a musical is, I think, the perfect vehicle to bring people together and dance and song and all that. It's one of the best ways, actually, to connect people.
Agreed. And, you know, when you sit in the audience, and I've seen the show now in, you know, regional towns and bigger towns and cities and things, and when the audience laughs together, when they clap together, when they stand up and give a standing ovation because they feel filled up, you get a sense of going, yep, this community can do anything. That's what I love about Western Sydney in particular, that there's lots of energies that can pull you apart, but the joy of coming together, and I think that's what I want the show to bring to, when it comes to the Colosseum, a real sense of community bonding through this story. No matter what your cultural background, actually understanding the First Nations story of this country is a foundation, is a fundamental that I think every person who has either migrated here in the last 2 years or the last 200 years, they need to understand that the First Nations narrative, the First Nations story of this country, so that we can actually build a stronger country together.
Yeah, and a First Nations story told by First Nations people, not told by anyone else. That's
yes, indeed.
Very, very important. And this brings us to the cast, because the Sunshine Club features a diverse cast of emerging and established First Nations artists. Can you tell us about the importance of representation and inclusion in casting for this production?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things, you've alluded to it already, in the past, often First Nations stories were told by non-First Nations people, people who had access to the means of production, to the means of making stories, those non-Indigenous people who said, this is a very important story, it needs to be told, and grateful for that because it, you know, opened up the doors. And then First Nations people coming in and us making our own stories, and, you know, especially in the film industry, when you see the diversity that's possible when First Nations people create their own shows, it's extraordinary, TV shows as well as large screen movies and things. And there's something about representation that means that when it was the non-Indigenous people telling our stories, there was a very, oh, how do I say this, a very one-sided kind of view. It was the only view that we would give to the public that non-Indigenous people would take. But when you let us get in the middle of it, we show a diversity of perspectives. It's wonderful to watch Roxanne McDonald, who is a stalwart of Aboriginal theatre. You know, I won't give away her age, but, you know, she's old enough to have been working for over 30 years wow. as an actor, and consistently being an actor, and watching her with her maturity on stage play Auntie Faith. And it's not just the, here's the old auntie housekeeper, you know, from the 1940s, kind of, you know, keeping it all together and, you know, heart of gold. You also see a side of her which goes, don't rock the boat, don't change the world. This is, you know, we fought for this. And you get a sense of the intergenerational issues that happen as well. I've seen even today, me in my 50s, you know, younger generations want to do things very differently. And it's fascinating to watch this intergenerational conversation happen about going, should we just be happy with what the older generation have fought for and achieved? Or do we have to keep fighting for something new and different? And I love putting that into the play too, because often, as First Nations Australians, we have to give a united front. We have to say we are all the same. We are all equal. We all believe the same. And in the last few years, and even the Voice referendum showed this as well, there is diversity in our community, and that diversity is a real strength. And putting that strength on stage is quite invigorating, quite, you know, shocking sometimes too. People go, oh, you can't do that. You can't say that. But in fact, it represents a much more diverse community, that we are not one just big homogenous group called, you know, First Nations Australians, Aboriginal Australians, Torres Strait Islander Australians, that we are in fact incredibly diverse. And on stage too, there are experienced people like Roxanne McDonald, and, you know, and watching Garrett Lyon, who plays Frank Doyle, absolutely knock it out of the park. He is extraordinary. He was on The Voice recently, I think last year, as a contestant. And you listen to him sing and you go, man, you're fantastic. And then his acting on top of that, he absolutely breaks my heart every time we see that. Well, I won't give away the ending, but where he goes emotionally on stage. And, you know, he's in his 20s. He's really making a name for himself. And that's fabulous to watch, you know, someone as experienced as Roxanne McDonald and as amazing as Garrett Lyons up there as well. And then people might, there are other people in the chorus who are just starting, you know, Jade and Alex, who are in the, let's call them the chorus. And they, you know, recent graduates or just early in their career. And I love this idea of giving people their first gig or giving people an opportunity. Or, you know, I love, as someone who has been working in theatre for, you know, a long time, you know, over 35 years, this idea of going, how do you make sure people have careers? You know, I watch Elaine Crombie and Ursula Jovich, Deborah Malaman, Wayne Blair. These people who you work with when they're younger go on to make incredible contributions. And so that's what I watch on stage, these amazing actors who are First Nations, really brilliant people, kind of getting up there and doing it. And, you know, Taya Maki is extraordinary as Pearl. And she comes from the Broom, you know, the Pigram family, who are incredible musicians. And watching this next generation of her family really take off, you go, amazing, absolutely amazing.
Coming back to the music side, the musical comprises 28 songs composed by Johnny Rogers.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the creative process behind selecting and integrating this music into the story?
Yeah, it was interesting because when we were writing the piece, I was 28 when I first wrote this musical, and John Rogers is not that much older than me. And we said, well, what's the music of the period? So we're talking about the late 1940s, early 1950s.
Yeah.
And we went through and did a lot of research around, you know, movie musicals of the period, stage musicals, popular music, and also the theatrical music of, say, post-World War II Germany and things like that, the jazz and kind of Kurt Weill, Brecht. And so there's a lot of different musical influences, but they're all based on that period of time. So there's wonderful ballads which have beautiful rhyming couplets and have a lovely structure, like a beautiful period song of the day, which would have been a popular thing playing on the radio, and all the way through to a very avant-garde jazz-based, very high atonal moments at times, which was part of that kind of Kurt Weill influence. And so the music is both toe-tapping and exciting and wonderful dancing, and then we add these lyrics. And because it's based in Brisbane, the show, yeah, where I come from, there's one song called Dancing Up a Storm, where everyone's getting very antsy and they're kind of, oh, they're about to have a fight. And old Auntie Faith comes in and says, you lot, you know, you better calm down. And she almost conjures up lightning and thunder. And they go, oh, that's what we need, a bit of a storm to calm things down. And they do this song called Dancing Up a Storm, where some wonderful lyrics which go, you know, listen to the thunder from the Gabba out to Nunda, and using Aboriginal place names of the places around Brisbane as a way of kind of exploring the weather. And I love this idea of that what sounds like a very popular music of the time, everything is an original song. And every moment there's this sense of saying, oh, that's about us. Whereas yeah, a lot of the music of the period was about somewhere else. We imported from America or from the UK a lot of music. And it's this wonderful clash of beautiful toe tappers and great things to dance to with lyrics that talk about us. From, you know, there's another song called Let It Rain, which talks about the rain falling on the sugar cane and the mango trees. And you go, yeah, that's all about us. And I love that. When you have something that's Australian, when you have something that's about us, the audience recognizes themselves on stage as well.
Wow, that's wonderful. And that character sounds like the big and strong matriarchal, you know, strong woman who really commands respect and is listened to. She's the one who you look up to and listen to.
And be careful, because she'll flog you too.
Now, last question. After Sydney, will you bring this to Melbourne?
You know, this show, which is touring around and has been touring for almost a year, it goes to where it's invited. If it's going to come to Melbourne, it's because someone there has invited it to come. It's gone to Geelong and Frankston. So it's got close to the inner city of Melbourne, but it hasn't got to be invited to Melbourne yet. And it's one of those things you go... it's something that it's a bigger question about what's going on in this country, about how we make spaces for new stories and new ways of seeing. And we have to, we have to keep an eye out for things. So I hope it can come to Melbourne. If someone's listening out there who wants to bring the Sunshine Club to Melbourne, give us a call. We're touring and we can definitely fit you in.
We'll put the word out there to our listeners to make some noise so we can get this groundbreaking musical to NAMM. Wesley Enoch, thank you very much for taking the time to share with us the story of your landmark musical, The Sunshine Club, and its return to Sydney and other places around the country. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Now, if you want to listen to this conversation again, you can find it on sbs.com.au/NITV Radio, and that's our website. Now, time for another song, Too Much by the Kid Laroi, also featuring South Korean Jungkook and a British Central C. And that was Too Much by the Kid Laroi, bringing us to the end of today's program. I'm Bertrand Tungendame, thanking you for your company this Monday afternoon. Your program will be back on Wednesday and Friday with more stories and news from right across the country. Thanks for your company again. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.